November 22nd, 1963. A day of tragedy in retrospect.
The weather in Fort Worth, Texas was dark and damp. The 35th President of the United States was in his hotel suite. He suddenly turned to an aide, Kenneth O'Donnell, and he mused aloud. He said, if anybody really wanted to shoot the President of the United States, it would not be a difficult job.
Years ago, I said that, introduced myself in Paris by saying that I was the man who had accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. I'm getting that same sensation as I travel around Texas. Nobody wonders what Lyndon and I wear.
Next month, when the United States of America fires the largest booster in the history of the world into space for the first time.
The president was jovial as he spoke to a Chamber of Commerce breakfast in Fort Worth. Someone gave him a 10-gallon Texas hat. Always somewhat shy about posing in out-of-character costumes, the president commented,
I'll put it on in the White House on Monday. If you'll come up there, you'll have a chance to see it there.
A few moments later, the Kennedy party boarded Air Force One and made the short trip to Dallas. The big jet landed at Love Field at 11:40 a.m.
Here is the presidential jet, U.S. Air Force number one, printed on the side. And the crowd begins its cheer, which you can't hear over the whistle and hum of the jet. But handkerchiefs are being waved, the placards are being held high, and hundreds of tiny American flags are now being waved toward the presidential jet. The doors fly open and the loading ladders are being wheeled into place. This is a split-second timed operation for the Secret Service and the Air Force and the Signal Corps. Nothing left to chance. Every possible precaution has been taken. The reception line is formed and there is Mrs. Kennedy, the First Lady, stepping from the plane, wearing a bright pink suit with a dark fur collar and a matching pink hat.
At 11:50 a.m., the Kennedys settled back in the deep cushions of the presidential limousine. In front of them, Governor and Mrs. Connolly. All along the motorcade route, enthusiastic people stood and cheered. Approaching downtown Dallas, the crowds thickened. As the limousine turned down Elm Street, passing the Texas Book Depository, Mrs. Connolly turned to face Kennedy and she said, Mr. President, you can't say that Dallas doesn't love you. The president replied, that is very obvious. A Dallas reporter was describing the parade.
The president's car is now turning onto Elm Street, and it will be only a matter of minutes before he arrives at the trademark. I was on Stemmons Freeway earlier, and even the freeway was jam-packed with spectators waiting their chance to see the president as he made his way towards the trademark. It appears as though something has happened in the motorcade route. Something, I repeat, has happened in the motorcade route. There's numerous people running up the hill alongside Elm Street, there by the Stemmons Freeway. Several police officers are rushing up the hill at this time. Stand by just a moment, please. Something has happened in the motorcade route.
Few noticed frightened pigeons wheel into the sunny skies atop the Book Depository building.
Hello, Leon. We're here at the trademark. The motorcade is coming by here. I can see many, many motorcycles coming by now, police motorcycles. Just heard a call on the radio for all units along Industrial to pick up the motorcade. Something has happened here. We understand there has been a shooting. The presidential car coming up now. We know it's the presidential car. You see Mrs. Kennedy's pink suit. There's a Secret Service man, spread eagle, over the top of the car. We understand Governor and Mrs. Connolly are in the car with President and Mrs. Kennedy. We can't see who has been hit, if anybody's been hit, but apparently something is wrong here. Something is terribly wrong. I'm in behind the motorcade, trying to follow them. It looks as though they're going to Parkland Hospital. We're on the road to Parkland at this time.
This was the scene in Dallas, Texas, 1 year ago.
Some 1,500 miles to the north, here in Detroit, it was a normal pre-Thanksgiving Friday. A busy day, cloudy skies, mild temperatures. On WKNR Radio at 1:40 p.m.
En tout chemin, en tout lieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu, il ne parle que du bon Dieu.
À l'époque où Jean sans terre d'Angleterre était le roi, Dominique, notre père, combattit les Albigeois.
News break. Here is a WKNR news break.
This bulletin just into WKNR News, Dateline, Dallas. The president has been shot. For a direct report, we switch to KVIL in Dallas.
President Kennedy was shot today as his motorcade left the downtown Dallas area. We repeat, the president of the United States was shot as his motorcade left the downtown Dallas area. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up, grabbed the president, and she cried, oh no, as the motorcade sped on. The president was taken to Parkland Hospital in Dallas, near the area in which he was to give a speech at the Dallas Trade Mart. Governor Connally, the governor of the state of Texas, was also shot. It is reported that bullet wounds were visible in Governor Connally's chest. Repeating the important information, the president of the United States, John Kennedy, was shot today as his motorcade left the area of downtown Dallas just before he was scheduled to make a speech. Also wounded in the would-be assassination was Governor John Connally of the state of Texas.
The afternoon never returned to normal. Nothing seemed quite the same as the world awaited more news from Dallas. It came shortly after 2 o'clock.
The President of the United States is dead. I have just talked to Father Oscar Hubert of the Holy Trinity Catholic Church. He and another priest tell me that the pair of men have just administered the last rites of the Catholic Church to President Kennedy. I asked the Father, is Mr. Kennedy dead? And his quote, he's dead all right. And just a few seconds ago, I talked to Thurman Ward, the Justice of the Peace of Garland. He's now here at the hospital to apparently officially declare that the chief executive of the United States has expired. President Kennedy has been assassinated. It's official now. The president is dead. Women here in shock, some fainted. Grown men, Secret Service men standing by the emergency room, tears streaming down their face. There's only one word to describe the picture here, and that's grief, and much of it. It's official. As of just a few moments ago, the President of the United States is dead.
Detroit, the entire of Michigan, all of the United States, in fact the world, was shocked and at first disbelieving. There was stunned shock on the streets of Detroit, as recorded by WKNR microphones.
Well, I was deeply shocked when I heard it. It's something that we're all sorry for. I know I am, and I know that this country is going to suffer by the death of President Kennedy.
I heard it this afternoon, and it really was a great shock to me.
I'm very shocked, but I still can't believe it. Doesn't seem possible.
Well, I think it's a terrible shock. I know it was to me. It's a terrible shock.
I think it's the most terrible thing that could happen to this country.
Official reaction came rapidly. Governor Romney described his hearing of the tragic news.
I just say to you that I haven't any question that the people of this country, regardless of party, are deeply grieved at such a shocking development. So contrary to the whole spirit of our country.
Detroit Mayor Kavanaugh.
I'm sure I speak for all the citizens here in the city when I say I'm grief-stricken over the tragic death of our beloved president, President Kennedy. Certainly he gave the ultimate to his country, his life, and I'm sure that history will rank President Kennedy as not only one of our truly courageous presidents, but also as one of the greatest.
It is all history, the events of that November 22nd and of 3 days that followed. 20th century history that seemed more to come from the Middle Ages. This martyred president left a heritage of perhaps more than any predecessor due to modern electronics.
Speaking in Detroit during a campaign swing, John Fitzgerald Kennedy showed warmth and humor when questioned about $100 a plate lunches.
I haven't heard of this brunch, so that we have no plan. We are having luncheons in which businessmen and others will be invited, and it's for, doesn't cost any amount of money. I would think that the problem of political parties raising funds is a difficult one. I'm not familiar with this one. I don't think that I'll be able to participate in it, but I'm very concerned about the problem with which both parties have of not being, of the difficulty of raising funds to carry on campaigns. Now, in the last part, I agree the Democratic Party is not the party of business. There's an awful lot of businessmen who have supported the Democratic Party. I think its base is very broad traditionally.
In Washington, the president commented on that year's Detroit newspaper strike.
Any newspaper strike is unfortunate because it affects not only the people involved on the paper, but it affects the whole community, the distribution of news and business. My understanding that on these strikes, federal mediators have been involved in attempting to be of assistance. And this matter was brought up to me this morning, and I discussed it with the Secretary of Labor, Goldberg, who said he would be glad to be of any use that he could if the party felt that he could be helpful. And I'm hopeful that a speedy solution can be reached.
The most remembered speeches show the pattern of this young, vibrant, ambitious man who left, he felt, much undone. It began in Washington, January 4th, 1961.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom, symbolizing an end as well as a beginning, signifying renewal as well as change. For I have sworn before you and Almighty God the same solemn oath our forebears prescribed nearly a century and three quarters ago.
I have today signed an executive order providing for the establishment of a Peace Corps on a temporary pilot basis. This corps will be a pool of trained men and women sent overseas by the United States government or through private institutions and organizations to help foreign countries meet their urgent needs for skilled manpower. We will send Americans abroad who are qualified to do a job. We're going to put particular emphasis on those men and women who have skills in teaching, agriculture, and in health. I'm hopeful that it will be a source of satisfaction to Americans and a contribution to world peace.
We have a long way to go in the space race. We started late, but this is the new ocean, and I believe the United States must sail on it and be in a position second to none.
Arms alone are not enough to keep the peace. It must be kept by men. Our instrument and our hope is the United Nations. And I see little merit in the impatience of those who would abandon this imperfect world instrument because they dislike our imperfect world.
My fellow citizens, let no one doubt that this is a difficult and dangerous effort on which we have set out. The path we have chosen for the present is full of hazards, as all paths are. But it is the one most consistent with our character and courage as a nation and our commitments around the world.
More than 3 years, I've spoken about the new frontier. This is not a partisan term, and it's not the exclusive property of Republicans or Democrats. It refers instead to this nation's place in history, to the fact that we do stand on the edge of a great new era, filled with both crisis and opportunity. An era to be characterized by achievement and by challenge. It is an era which calls for action and for the best efforts of all those who would test the unknown and the uncertain in every phase of human endeavor. It is a time for pathfinders and pioneers. I have come to Texas today to salute an outstanding group.
But in Texas, time ran out. And a meaningless act of violence at 1:30 p.m. on November 22nd, 1963, ended at 2 years, 10 months, and 2 days. The first term of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 35th President of the United States. To commemorate the martyred memory of this man, there were those who commented on the tragic events in a Texas town this day. They all spoke with sorrow.
The tragedy of this day is beyond instant comprehension. All of us who knew him will bear the grief of his death to the day of ours. And all men everywhere who love peace and justice and freedom will bow their heads. At such a moment, we can only turn to prayer. Prayer to comfort our grief, to sustain Mrs. Kennedy and his family, to strengthen President Johnson, and to guide us in time to come. May God help us.
I share the sense of shock and dismay that the entire nation must feel at the despicable act that took the life of the nation's president.
In 3 short years of his presidency, he left an indelible mark on his country and on the world. And for us in Britain, his loss is a deep and a sad one, because he was the most loyal and faithful of allies.
What a price we pay for this fanaticism. It has been said that the only thing we learn from history is that we do not learn. But surely we can learn if we have the will to do so. Surely there is a lesson to be learned from this tragic event.
There was a father with a little boy and a little girl, and the joy of each in the other end, in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands. There was a husband who asked much and gave much. And out of the giving and the asking, woe with a woman, what could not be broken in life? And in a moment, it was no more. And so, she took a ring from her finger and placed it in his hands and kissed him and closed the lid of the coffin. A piece of each of us died at that moment.
And one last hail to the chief. We all felt that we knew him.
He was the young man with the young family who lived in the great White House. He was the man who loved his country and served it almost all of his life, in the South Pacific, in Congress, in the great office of the presidency.
He was a vigorous, exciting man who loved the rough and tumble of political challenge.
He was a vibrant man who loved the great thundering crowds of noisy cities. A thoughtful man who loved the solitude of the windswept coasts of his native New England.
He was a man of great dedication, who accepted the responsibilities and awesome decisions of his office with honor and courage.
He was a devoted man who deeply loved his family, a just man who asked God's help and guidance to keep the peace in a troubled world.
He was a man of warmth, of wit, and of wisdom. He was the young president, we all felt we knew so well.
The world knew John Fitzgerald Kennedy, too. When free men everywhere remember him, they honor us, and we are proud.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
You have just heard November 22nd, 1963, in retrospect. This program prepared and produced by WKNR News. Contributors included KVIL, KBOX, WFAA, and KLIF, all of Dallas, Texas. Colpix Records, Documentaries Unlimited. The narration was by Philip Nye and Ed Mullen. This is Lou Morton speaking.